Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I see we have a few new people here today. So welcome. Always glad to see that there are new people. And don't worry about making mistakes. You'll get with the routine after a while. So just come and be silent and hopefully feel comfortable. So I'm going to talk about the fourth of the great vows. And just to review, I've already covered the first three. The first one is, creations are numberless, and I vow to free them. And these vows, as I've mentioned before, should be viewed as a commitment that we make to this practice. And these vows are not exclusive to Zen practice. They're found throughout Buddhism and all the different expressions of Buddhism. There are the great vows. So like I said, the first one is, creations are numberless, and I vow to free them. We commit ourselves to help all other beings be free of suffering. And we do that for each other. And the second vow is, delusions are inexhaustible, and I vow to put an end to them. Now, another way to say that is, the delusions are inexhaustible, and I vow to see through them, to go into the delusions and see them for what they are. And then the third vow is, dharmas are boundless, and I vow to embody them. And there are two aspects of dharmas. The dharma, in one respect, is the teaching or the teachings of the Buddha. And another way to see dharmas are everything that we encounter, every expression of reality. And each one can be seen as a teaching. So you're driving home, and the person next to you cuts you off, almost drives you off the road. And you feel that, whoosh, that anger explode, right? Faces red. Thoughts about chasing this person down and screaming at them. That's a dharma. That's a teaching. And so if you see through that delusion, all that anger melts. The red face cools off. And so the fourth vow, the one that I'll talk about today, the way we recite it is, the enlightened way is inconceivable. I vow to attain it. So it's inconceivable. Right? We can talk about enlightenment. We can read about enlightenment. We can have conversations about enlightenment. We can have practice circles about enlightenment. But really, it's inconceivable. Words, discussions cannot capture the essence of an awakened mind. So it says, you know, I vow to attain it. But I would say we vow to realize it. There's nothing to attain. We're already perfect and complete as we are. And so the path to awakening is to realize that we are perfect and complete. Realize that we are already enlightened. We're just out of touch with the truth of that. Now, to me, the four of these great vows are the commitment that we make to the past. And so the way it makes more sense to me is to start with, make the second one the first one, delusions are inexhaustible, and I vow to see through them. And then the next one, number two, would be, dharmas are boundless, and I vow to embody them. And then the third would be the enlightened way, which I just talked about. And the final one I would put, as creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Because that's another part of awakening. We don't just awaken for ourselves. We awaken for everyone. So normally we understand enlightenment as the realization of the oneness of everything. And one of the common ways that we express that is, I am you, and you are me. Right? There's no real separation. That's oneness. Right? We are one with the universe. And oneness is not just this blop, this thing, oneness. It's incredibly dynamic, that breakthrough into the oneness of things. We realize it's not just a word. It's incredibly dynamic. Another thing about oneness is, it's not an idea. It's not something that if we get our PhD in oneness that we understand it. And that's because enlightenment is an experience. It's not an intellectual conclusion. It's an experience. So when the mind is still, we realize that we have been tricked into believing that everything in the world is separate. That the world is filled with all these different things which are disconnected to each other. But if we sit, if we meditate, and we devote ourselves to this meditation, at some point we may experience this oneness. And that's what we call an aha moment. You know, all of a sudden it's clear. It's aha. Aha. And now I'm going to tell a little story about an experience that I had, which I think is an example of the way our minds function and how we don't see clearly. About a month ago, I was invited to go to a fundraiser. And it was explicitly told how to dress, you know, how to wear a jacket. So I didn't have a jacket. I had a suit, but unfortunately, since I got married, I put on a few pounds, and the suit's pretty tight. And I knew it wasn't going to be all that comfortable. So I went out to look for a jacket. And I went to a number of places, and each place I went, these jackets were like $500. And, I wasn't expecting to spend that much money. So I continued to look around, and at one point somebody said, well, you can get a good deal at Macy's. So I went to Macy's, and I parked my car in the parking lot, and I went through the entrance, but I'm preoccupied with finding a jacket and thinking, you know, all the thoughts about, well, I wonder if you can bargain with, you know, how all this works. So I get on the elevator, and I go up to the second floor where menswear is, and I'm looking around, and eventually, this very nice guy, we go through this routine about he takes me to, you know, different jackets. And, you know, of course, the most expensive ones are the ones that I like. But anyway, I'm consumed by this process. You know, I'm going through all this stuff. I need to get a jacket because this fundraiser is tomorrow. So eventually, he convinces me to get a particular jacket, which wasn't $500. I think it was $350. But anyway, I decide that I'm going to buy this jacket. And so, you know, we're chatting, and he puts it on a hanger and, you know, puts it in one of those bags that cover suits and jackets. And so after I paid, I turn around to go out of the building, and there's the entranceway. So I walk out of the entranceway to the parking lot to get my car, and I don't see it. And of course, you know, the first thing is, oh shit, my freaking car is stolen. How the hell, you know, I start running through all these things about how am I going to get home? Who can I call that's going to be around during the day? And then I walk up and down maybe three or four times, you know, like thinking, well, maybe I didn't park it in the place that I usually parked it. But the parking lot wasn't really that full. My car was not there. So I went back into the store thinking, well, I might have to call the police. But before I did that, you know, for the second or third time, I sort of walked around the store and I looked, and, you know, that door outside was the place where I came in. And so I went out one more time, this time with my remote, pushing the button, maybe the button, you know, the horn would beep. Nothing. Silence. So I go back in to the store to talk to this guy and see what they do in terms of security and stuff. And as I'm walking back in, I see an escalator. And all of a sudden, aha! This building had two levels. One went to a parking lot on the upper level, and one went to a parking lot over the higher level. And I assumed that I went by going through this door, which looked exactly the same as the door downstairs, that I was going into the parking lot. But I was so, I had such a tight grip on what I thought I understood. You know, this was the way out, that I kept doing it, thinking as if something would change. Well, this is the way our practice is, right? We are raised with the idea that things are dualistic, and that's how we see the world, and that's what we're comfortable with. And that's what we're familiar with. And so we have a death grip on that particular way of seeing the world. And this practice is about seeing the elevator that goes downstairs. And when we see that elevator, it's bam, aha. So it's not enough just to have insight. It's not enough to be blown away and have that incredible experience where we're connected to everything. You know, it can be very emotional and freeing. But that's not enough. You know, there's that koan which I've mentioned many times. What do you do when you get to the top of the 100-foot pole? That means enlightenment never ends. You keep climbing. And one of the ways to keep climbing is to step off the pole back into the marketplace, back into the world, and use this insight to help others by realizing that they are us. And how can we not help? Right? It's really not an experience of, I am going to help you. I am helping, right? Because everything is me. I am helping. It's just helping. And another way to express that, I know I use this all the time, but for the new people who haven't heard this, it's Bernie Glassman's example of, he talks about, Bernie Glassman is the second teacher. Maizumi Roshi was first, and then Bernie Glassman, and then Genpo Roshi, and on down. And this is the lineage, you know, the Dharma has been passed down in this lineage. And so Bernie is the first one to be made a teacher in his own right, a sensei, and then a Roshi. He was a conventional teacher for about 20 years, I think he says. And then he dropped his robes. He took his robes off. And he decided that the way to serve others was through social action. And I won't get into the long story about that. But when he was talking about social action and service to others, he would use his two hands. And one of the ways that he would use his two hands, he talked about putting your hand in the oven. And you miss what you're going to grab, and your hand touches the hot oven rack, right? And it's burned. Ah, right? It's like, oh my God. But what happens? The other hand comes right over and holds the hand that has just been burned. The one hand did not think for one second, uh-oh, my other hand is burned. I better go over and grab it. No, it's instant, right? And the reason that it's instant is there is no separation. This hand and this hand are all part of the same body, just like we are all part of the same body. And so, from the enlightened way, we don't think about responding. We respond. So in writing this, I came across a story, which I like, so I'm going to share it. It's about three people who are walking in the desert, and they're lost. They're out of water. And they have no food. And they've been wandering in the desert for days. So they're pretty near death. And eventually, and this is not Mexico, by the way, they come to a high wall. And they get to the wall. And the first one of these men climbs up, gets to the top, and turns around and looks at the other two with such joy in his face. And he turns around and he climbs down the wall and disappears. So seeing this, the second guy climbs the wall. And he gets to the top and he looks out. And he screams out in ecstasy, how wonderful. And he climbs down the wall. The third guy comes along. And he also climbs up the wall. And what he sees is a beautiful garden in the middle of the desert. And the garden has streams and water and little ponds. Lots of fruit trees, which provide fruit and also shade from the sun. He just smiles, and he turns around and climbs back down the wall. And he turns back down the wall to help others to this oasis. All right, so that's the step after enlightenment, to serve others, which if we go back is the first great vow. Now, I know that I've mentioned a couple of times the idea that if you want to know the depth of your practice, go and look how you placed your shoes on the shoe rack. Well, I came across this quote, which maybe is where I got that from. But Kobo Daishi, the Zen master, said, "We can tell the depth of a person's enlightenment by how they serve others." And the final thing that I'd like to say about this is none of us has to wait and to be enlightened to live an enlightened life. There are many people in this world that live out their lives in a very enlightened way and yet have never had the experience named enlightenment. So let me just say that again, because I think it's extremely important. You don't have to live an enlightened life. You don't have to be enlightened to live an enlightened life. We can reach out to others. We can help others. We can do things in the community to serve others. And that is enlightened action. Thank you.